The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, AVB. Again, very bad. Awful Vesuvian blowout. Actually, why bother? Yes, Chelsea's collapse in Naples amid acronyms and acrimony. Are veterans behind it? And is the choice now Andre versus Benitez? Elsewhere, it's another sorry performance as Carlos Tevez finally apologises to Man City. There's Liverpool finally going to Wembley in the Carling Cup against Cardiff. There's Arsenal Spurs in the big North London derby and the big top-of-the-table clash in Italy, Milan-Juventus. With just one point between them, it's harder to call than customer services. All of that, plus Raphael Honigstein and posts and tweets and much, much more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. Football Weekly Extra today with Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
And Greg Ruffley.
Hi, James.
And fresh in from some Olympic planning thing. Owen Gibson.
Hello.
Owen, what were they discussing?
They were supposed to be unveiling the details of the Olympics closing ceremony.
And did they?
They revealed it would be a musical mashup.
Right.
Very East End.
Yes.
From Adele to Elgar, whatever that means.
That's a pretty broad range.
Pretty broad spectrum, yeah.
Right, okay.
I imagine the Beatles will feature somewhere.
You think?
Bit of Jerusalem.
Paul McCartney?
Bit of Queensland.
I bet there's got to be some Kasabian in there, hasn't there? Bit of Kasabian?
The central British band, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mentioned Kasabian because we were just having a bit of a Kasabian chat before we got going. Where do you stand on Kasabian, Owen?
Not a huge fan.
No.
Oasis Light.
Yeah, interesting point, because Greg was making very much... They're very football, though, aren't they, Kasabian?
They're very football.
Very
they're just a band for Oasis fans who haven't got Oasis anymore. It's the very late 90s, and they're very dull.
Jacob?
I'm a bit of balance here.
You like
I'm okay,
Kasabian.
Well, I'm okay with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Never got over Oasis, did you?
Yeah, they're big in the 90s when I was seven.
Right, okay. All right, then. Now, we can't sit here yakking about, guitar-based British rock bands all day, because we've got the Champions League, first of all, to discuss. And have that, House Martins. It's Italy 7, London 1. Hmm? I mean, what did you make of Tuesday night at the San Paolo?
Well, it was... I suppose if AVB is going down, he's going down fighting, I suppose. It was described beforehand as a potentially suicidal team selection, and you just wonder if that's how it'll turn out. I mean, you know, if it worked, then it could have been the moment at which everything turned around for him, but it didn't.
Yeah, everybody, as you say, was calling it 11-name suicide. No, but was it that daft? You put Matter in the middle, you leave out Frank Lampard. You can see that point. But the Bissouma-Ashley Cole thing was a bit more of a conundrum. But then Ashley Cole, when he came on, didn't exactly... Well, he cleared that what would have been a goal off the line. But beyond that, did he do much?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think it was explainable. I mean, I think the Morelles and as a defensive midfielder doesn't necessarily work. When he explained it, it did seem to make some sort of sense. But Malouda's been dreadful. Morelles has been dreadful of late. If you're sort of counting on Drogba to be your leader of men and be the man who'll hit around the team, who'll rouse the team that are in a slump, then I think you're probably struggling. And I think it's just symptomatic of all the problems he's got. You know, since he came in on a sticky wicket because he didn't have time to bring his own men in, he didn't bring his own. He still had the rump of the squad that everybody agrees needs to be overhauled. So this season was always going to be one of transition, which is a cliche, and he was always going to have to balance that with just doing enough to finish in the top four as well. And the minute it looks like he won't do that is when the panic button will get pressed, and that's why we're hearing about Benitez and all the rest of it.
Mm, well, indeed, and we'll hear more about that in a second or two. It is fair to mention they were in control of the game at times. They enjoyed the bulk of possession, but they were playing a Napoli team that can be deadly, Jacob.
They can be deadly, but I don't think the Napoli are that good.
No, ridiculous. It was a ridiculous game in many ways, wasn't it?
The goal they conceded was awful. Not really what you expect of a team in the Champions League. They have three brilliant attackers, particularly Cavani, who's just amazing. And I like Maggio as well on the right, who just gave Cole an awful time. And Inler's good as well.
Inler and Gargano.
But defensively, they're nothing to worry about at all. And Chelsea just don't really have anyone up front anymore. Or they don't have anyone creating for people up front. Because as much as we talk about Torres not getting any chances, Drogba did nothing as well.
Mm.
So that's a huge problem.
Yeah, Chelsea. But what about Lavezzi? What about Cavani?
I mean, I think
the way they opened up Chelsea?
On the break, fantastic.
Yeah. And, people are saying Chelsea got their away goal in 3 weeks' time at Stamford Bridge.
Well, yeah.
They can turn this around. But Napoli, they're perfectly placed, aren't they?
Also, I think it's only three teams have overhauled a two-goal deficit in the Champions League.
And you just can't see that Chelsea team not conceding at the moment, which is an extraordinary thing to say when you think what
they've done. I mean, how out of his depth was Gary Cahill and the third goal for Davide Luiz?
On a broader point about Chelsea and Villas Boas, when he came in, he knew what kind of squad he was inheriting. He knew what kind of football they played at that point. I think as much as he's always wanted to implement his new ideas, he has been a little bit naive by trying to implant his tactics onto that squad as quickly as he has done and expect them all to kind of be able to perform, you know, in that framework and with this very high line. And absolutely, I think that's why they're getting exposed over and over again.
I think he's abandoned that a little bit now. I mean, I think he came in and everybody talks about how he's played this high line and this pressing game. That didn't work. He sort of abandoned it. It doesn't really seem to me he's got a plan B. He seems to be just almost kind of chucking names at the team sheet and hoping that something's going
to
work.
Transition needed to be a little bit slower, I think.
But for the first time, it seems to be the indication that Abramovich is actually blaming the players and not the manager. I don't think that he should be sacked. I don't think he's doing a great job at the moment for what he has. But if you were to be ridiculously harsh about this group of players, for a few years, they haven't really won anything. Since 2006, since Mourinho's gone, one title and FA Cups, which, how much do you count that?
The FA Cup? Jacob Steinberg?
Well, okay, when you're a big side
that's
like Chelsea.
That's the new generation, isn't it? That's
West
the sound
of it. In 2006, you'd have never thought
but when
that.
You're, but when you're a big side, it's not what you're really going for, is it? And the same for the Carling Cup. They've been in one final for the last 2 years. They've been knocked out quite comprehensively by the first good team they played in the Champions League. So the egos are quite out of proportion.
I think most Chelsea fans would probably agree that Abramovich has got to be more patient. But their fear is that he's finally realised he's got to be more patient, but it might be with the wrong man. You know, I mean, Villas-Boas has not necessarily shown signs so far that he can be the man.
Mm. Well, he insists that he does have the long-term backing of the club. The papers, certainly the next day, were all full of how long can this man survive? And by Thursday morning, it was talk of Rafa Benitez. To get a little bit more of an idea of how real the prospect of the Spaniard turning up at Stamford Bridge, let's now hear from Dominic Fifield, who's at Wembley, strangely enough, waiting to hear the exciting details of Stuart Pearce's New England team, but more on that perhaps later. Right now, Dominic on Chelsea. Dominic, Andre Villas-Boas says that he's there for the long term and the club have told him that. How real a chance do you think there is that Benitez might turn up at Stamford Bridge?
To be honest, I can see the attraction in him for Abramovich if he was looking to go down that way. I don't think Benitez would accept a short-term deal. He'd have to want 18 months at the very least to actually implement anything. I just think that the fans would react very badly at Chelsea and also at Liverpool, because I suspect that Benitez will still place some standing on it and on how he's viewed by the vast majority of support up at Anfield. I think there was a lot of bad blood between the two clubs during the Mourinho era, all the guys' goals, etc. And I think a lot of the Chelsea supporters would find it very difficult to accept Benitez as their manager, even if there is a certain level of disillusion at the way things are going under Villas-Boas. So I don't see it as an actual fit, really. I think it's great for Benitez to be linked with jobs like that, and I can see the attraction for him in getting back into management at a top club with some clout in the market, but it doesn't seem quite right. So the whole idea of Benitez, the style of football that again that he played at Liverpool, wouldn't necessarily attract Abramovich either. On the counter side, of course, he might get the best out of Fernando Torres. We've been waiting for somebody to do that for some time at Chelsea.
Okay, but is it real? Do you think the interest from Chelsea, or do you think that's something as much as anything that comes from Benitez's people?
I think it's something at some level, people claiming to represent Chelsea have sounded out Rafa Benitez. The problem with Chelsea is that everything just depends on Abramovich. He does things on a whim. If he decides to do something, he does it. He has an army of advisors, from agents to directors to business colleagues, who have his ear. You can listen to one person one day, another person the next. At some level, somebody has sounded out Benitez's people, and just to see whether he will be interested in doing it. Whether that is the defining opinion that Abramovich eventually goes with, I would suggest is doubtful.
Dominic Fifield at Wembley. Well, whatever the whim of Abramovich, there is also the issue of what seems to be a pretty serious rift with the Chelsea players now for André Villas-Boas.
I think there's another issue as well, which people haven't perhaps picked up on, which is the financial side of this, which is that, you know, we learned earlier this month that Chelsea had cost them £24 million to pay off Ancelotti and to hire Villas-Boas. Over the last four seasons, they've spent £60 million plus just hiring and firing managers. Financial fair play is coming in. If they're going to spend another £20 or £30 million refreshing their management team again and then have to give them money to spend to refresh the squad, that's going to be difficult for them when they've got to comply with this.
See,
UEFA.
The smart money would be on André Villas-Boas, was given his full title, Luis André de Pina Cabral e Villas-Boas. And think of the acronyms you could make out of that. The smart money on him still being there, whatever happens in March in the big crunch games.
Stick with him. Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, they've made that commitment, and I think they should live by that commitment and at least give him next season as well, with his, you know, with a few more players at his choice playing in this formation. You know,
we know how seriously you take commitment, name changing Greg Ruffley.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
All right then. Well, I do mention the rift between the manager and the players because it is a serious issue. Their results have been absolutely rubbish, and they've got Bolton at home at Stamford Bridge. You know, however much the ownership backs him up, he's still got to get to the end of the season with these players.
Absolutely, and try and get that fourth spot, and that's going to be key. And I think that group of players at Chelsea for such a long time have been used to being able to push a manager over the edge whenever they wanted to, effectively. And that, you know, they communicate directly with Abramovich, and they've known they've had that power. If there's now a sign to them that power balance is shifting, that's going to be interesting too, to see how that plays out. Whether they throw their toys out of the pram, and, you know, if what we're hearing is right and Abramovich is prepared to start standing up to them, then how that will affect their performance on the pitch.
What's interesting is when Benitez came into Liverpool, is the first thing he did was break up the English quartet who were there. So I've got to get rid of two of Murphy, Carragher, Gerrard and Owen. And he got rid of Murphy and Owen, but he was quite happy to get rid of Gerrard. Whereas Villas-Boas, he should have sold some of these guys in the summer.
Did he not arrive too late to do that?
He arrived in May, didn't he? Well,
no, he arrived
in June, basically, by the time they'd done all the toing and froing over the compensation and so on. And then I think by then there probably wasn't time to shift out a Terry, a Lampard. And he didn't seem to quite have the confidence to do it either. I think that's partly the problem. I mean, if you look at what Fergus has done, he's kept the ones, the Scholes and the Giggs that have, you know, that he's not.
He
knows
he can. Those players
and still. He's got rid of
people like Beckham as well.
Exactly.
But one at a time. I think that's the thing with Sir Alex. But that's another issue. I did want to just ask, what are the odds of Bolton coming in to Stamford Bridge this weekend and exploiting a very, very precarious position?
Well, Bolton aren't great, but Birmingham had no trouble on the weekend, and they're in the Championship.
The way Chelsea are playing at the moment, I think there's every chance they could get a draw.
It was a 5-1 win for Chelsea at the Reebok. Bolton looking all right, actually, in the Cup the other day, when that 2-0 win over Millwall, admittedly Millwall. Yeah. But we were lavishing praise on Miaichi.
At times against Napoli, I know, talking about Bolton, at times against Napoli, I know they Chelsea defended appallingly, but they played well in periods, and I think if you play against Bolton and play as well as they did against Napoli, I think they'll beat them.
And you wonder when Sturridge will get his chance through the middle. I mean, if you're Daniel Sturridge and you're watching Torres labouring and even Drogba labouring, you know, you must be pretty frustrated.
Well, the problem is they've got no one else to play on the wing, though.
Sure.
And they've got no wingers, so it has to be Sturridge there. And he comes inside and Mata isn't quick, so there's no pace in the side.
Mm. Problems then, eh? Now, Bolton, one of five teams clustered within 2 points at the bottom of the table. We're going to take you on Aston Villa this weekend. QPR host Fulham. Wolves, still managerless, are at Newcastle, and Blackburn Rovers are at Manchester City, which convoluted segue takes us neatly onto another big bit of news this week, which is that Carlos Tevez has now backed down and issued a rather sincere and heartfelt apology to Roberto Mancini and Man City, who he no longer accuses of treating him like a dog. It's interesting, this super weapon for Mancini to have for the run-in. Last season's top scorer, but he's in pre-season training type training at the moment, and won't be ready for another couple of weeks, Tevez.
No, I think it's great for them to have him back, if you ignore all the baggage that comes with him. If you look at their away form, it's been really poor for a couple of months. They've struggled to break teams down. Tevez gets a lot of important goals in big games. He'll get the scrappy goals, which maybe someone like Aguero, as good as he is, won't get. So I think when they're going for the title, and they're also having to play on Thursday nights and then play on Sunday, Tevez is a really could be a real game changer for
proved,
them.
Proved, doesn't he? You know, kind of, no matter what else is going on off the pitch, he can still turn it on the pitch. Yeah. I mean, he's remarkable in that sense, and that he still, no matter what else is going on, he still seems to be able to play.
The Tevez as a player is completely the opposite of him as a person off the pitch in that he's committed, and he's the one player who you look at and think he's trying really hard. Yet you've got this other.
Well, yeah, he fools fans like that.
Yeah, he fools everybody. Yeah.
City, in the meantime, completing the job they were doing over Porto in the Europa League on Wednesday night with a 4-0 win at the Etihad Stadium. Jacob, I can't help but notice you're wearing an Incredible Hulk T-shirt today.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is actually a bit offensive, isn't it?
Well, no, only if it said you're not incredible.
Oh, I see. That's the key thing. That's the thin line. Mm. So do tell us the story behind that, then.
Well, Porto, who had their fans were allegedly making racist chants against some of the Manchester City's black players last week, have now...
Porto then explained that they were actually cheering for Kun Aguero, who wasn't on the field at the time. But
or indeed playing for Porto. they have now making a complaint to UEFA about Manchester City's chants to Hulk, which were mildly amusing. You're not incredible.
What was the tune they were singing that to?
You're not incredible, I'm guessing.
Okay.
I imagine, yeah. I mean, it's incredibly offensive. I mean, this day and age, you can't be doing that kind of thing. I mean, as a Liverpool fan, I know that more than any other. You know, you just can't do that.
Calm
about
down.
A character who's not, you know, a different colour to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, right, okay. Super stuff. Well, that's great news for Man City, then. That's the collective view on that. Lovely, that brings to an end part one, although I should just say City playing Blackburn, I mentioned that, 4-0 it was for them at Ewood, can't see really, right. Although their last visit to Manchester, of course they produced one of the surprises of the season.
It's true, and Blackburn looking much better all of a sudden, aren't they? I mean, that relegation battle's really interesting, isn't it? I mean,
QPR
are looking as though they're on a downward trend, and Blackburn looking a bit stronger again.
But all of those five teams, just 2 points between them, amazing. Anyway, right, now, all sorts of excitement coming up in part two when we tackle more Champions League action, including Bayern Munich's defeat at the hands of Swiss side Basel. Part two begins, and it's my great pleasure to welcome back to the pod Raphael Honigstein. Raphael.
Hello, James.
Tell us about Bayern Munich and their disastrous visit to the St. Jakobs Park.
Yeah, well, you kind of summed it up in the intro there. It was a disastrous visit. They lost 1-0 and, you know, put themselves in a really difficult position. It's a terrible result. And, you know, they conceded the goal from Stocker, well-worked goal, with 5 minutes before the end and didn't really have time to react. And they went to the dressing room shouting at each other, the players pointing fingers. Some were blaming Thomas Müller, some were blaming Rafinha. And it was just another really very ordinary performance to the point of being inept for the occasion. And, you know, if you look at their domestic form, if you look at the game coming up on Sunday at home to Schalke, they are approaching bona fide crisis mode.
Oh, good. I like it when teams are in crisis. Good. Now, Basel had actually hit the frame of the goal on two other occasions, if I'm not mistaken, before this, so they were certainly good value for the win. What are their chances of pulling off another result when they play the return leg at the Allianz Arena?
Well, I'd say their chances are pretty good because they love to play on the counter-attack. That's really their game plan, and they're in a perfect position to do that in Munich. Going forward, they look very, very dangerous. As you said, Neuer made a fantastic save to palm a header away onto the post, and then they hit the... to hit the bar from 5 metres out with Frey, and should have perhaps scored earlier and should have perhaps scored more. At the defence, they're also a bit vulnerable. So I think, you know, it was only a 1-0 game, but it could have easily been a 2-2, 3-all. So I think we're going to see a lot more goals, especially when you consider that the pitch would be a lot more amenable to decent football in Munich. It was a bit of a potato field, as we say in German, Kartoffelacker. Down at the St. Jakob Park. So it's still everything to play for Bayern, but as I said, I mean, they're very low on confidence and there is a sense that their whole season might well fall apart in the next 3 weeks.
In Germany, what's the thoughts about Heiko Vogel, the Basel manager? Because I know he's only 36 and he's in this kind of, it's very early days, but he's in this kind of mould as a manager like Mourinho, AVB, and that they weren't they weren't anything as a player, but you know, he's come into coaching at a very early age in his 20s at Bayern Munich, spent 9 years there, and is he expected to come back into the German game if he, you know, proves himself at in Switzerland?
Yeah, I think he's becoming a name, you know, already knocking out United, put him on the map a little bit. It's his first ever job as a senior manager. He was only an assistant before. He kind of inherited the job when Thorsten Fink moved from Basel to Hamburg. And you're right. I mean, he is becoming someone who might be considered for a bigger job, especially going back to Germany. But I think at the moment, he's having such a good time. And, you know, Basel is sort of the Bayern Munich of Switzerland. So if you're in charge there, you're almost guaranteed to win titles. And I think he can only improve his reputation. And I think 3-4 years down the line, we might even see a scenario where he can get the Bayern job if he continues doing as well as he's doing now.
Mm. In the meantime, great feel-good story, the whole Basel business, the goalie Jan Sommer saying, we've beaten maybe the best two teams in the world. It's amazing what happened here. We believed in ourselves after the Bayern victory. And, of course, referring there to the earlier success against Manchester United. And you were tweeting one or two comments from the Basel players about the way that the Man United players had reacted to that earlier defeat, Raphael.
Yes, it was really Shadon Shaqiri saying two things. One, that he felt that they were being underestimated. Even when United needed a result in Basel, he felt there was a lack of focus. He could sense that they weren't quite taking him seriously, even in the warm-up, in the tunnel. I think the body language, he was saying, didn't seem quite right. And then afterwards, after the final whistle, he kind of complained that he didn't get a chance to swap shirts because they'd left so early and they were so quick to get out. But going back to Sommer, I mean, this guy had an absolutely amazing game. You know, if you're looking at any, if you need a young keeper for your team, who is very much in the mode of sort of the, you know, Van der Sar kind of style, where he plays a lot, comes out a lot, but it has also fantastic reactions. I mean, this guy had the game of his life against Bayern. Ribery had 2 one-on-ones with him. He made fantastic saves. His all-round performance was absolutely brilliant. Manuel Neuer was sort of left in the shade a little bit by just how good that guy was. So I think he's got, personally, all sorts of reasons for feeling proud about this performance.
All right, it could be a big summer signing, who knows, in the months to come. Anyway, fantastic stuff, Raphael. Many thanks for that. You're going to be joining us in the pod with more soon, I hope.
Oh, I hope so too.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, one or two other interesting results in the Champions League last 16 this week. You had Winter losing last minute. In a phenomenally dull game at the Stade Vélodrome.
Hmm. Me and Greg were talking before about whether this is perhaps the weakest Champions League for quite a long time. I was struck by how low the quality was last night in that game, how boring it was.
A lot of disappointed ITV executives, I imagine, prime time in ITV. Well, yeah, I bet they didn't expect that at this stage of the Champions League. You know?
Jacob made a point that there's just not that many great players around, or it doesn't seem that there's that many great players around at the moment. And I suggested that it might be to do with that as soon as any players look like they're going to be very, very good, they get snapped up by a big club and then get lost there and maybe end up on the bench and don't fulfil the potential that they used to. So you used to have, in years gone by, they'd have lots of great players around playing in different parts of Europe, like the Laudrups, and you'd have Prozanetski in Yugoslavia and stuff, who were very, very good players and stalwarts at the clubs and would all come to the European game, to the Champions League or the European Cup as it was, and light it up every week. Whereas now they're all stationed at, you know, at Real Madrid, at Barcelona, at the Manchester clubs who aren't in the final stage, the latter
case,
stages.
That's been the case for a long time, hasn't it? But I think it's more to do with the clubs that aren't there in this knockout phase, isn't it? It's definitely missing.
I think it's slightly anomalous that the Manchester clubs aren't there, and also Spurs aren't there as well. They would probably make this a better competition, whereas the two English sides that are there are a joke. But I think also the perception is skewed by the fact that Barcelona and Madrid are just so much better than everybody else. If they sort of drop off a little bit, the level will kind of become more even.
Is it not also slightly parochial as well, in that the English teams just haven't done well, so we're saying it's not so, you know, if you're...
Well,
if
yeah,
you're,
but I think that Chelsea, Mourinho's Chelsea would beat that Napoli side quite easily.
It wouldn't be as much fun to watch though, would it?
No, I'm not saying it's not enjoyable. Right. I'm just saying that it's not necessarily
good.
The
only other team that could challenge Barcelona and Milan at this moment, and they're not a patch on the Milan of 2005-06, so... Yeah. Hmm. Kind of just not as good.
Nando Munoz, among those tweeting on the subject of the Champions League, he wants everyone to name their ideal Champions League final and why. Who would you like to see in the final?
I think Barcelona v Bayern Munich would be good. Just,
really?
Just because it's at Bayern Munich's home ground. I mean, yeah. We don't want another Barcelona-Madrid, do we?
Mm.
Yeah. No, I don't. Or Barcelona-Milan, so. One of those two.
Greg?
Barcelona-Milan or Basel and Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
You say they want Barcelona-Madrid. I think I'd quite like to see another Barcelona-Madrid for drama.
Right. What about Hapoel Nicosia? You've got to love a bit of Cypriot action in the final? Yes.
Perhaps not.
Perhaps not then. All right. We'll move on. More cup news. And it's the Carling Cup final now. For the first time in 16 years, Greg Ruffley, Liverpool heading to Wembley.
To Wembley, yeah.
You excited?
Yeah. I am very excited. I'm going on Sunday, meeting my dad and my mates, and we're going to have a good day out. And the last time I went to Wembley was 1988.
Ooh.
And that final against Wimbledon. I never went in 96. Didn't have the cash.
Will they be wearing cream suits this time, do you think?
I'd like it if they did, actually.
Yeah,
come
too.
On. Yeah, go for it. I mean, it's an interesting game, and it's very reminiscent of the Birmingham final in 2001 in Cardiff, which I went to. And it could signal, you know, I think just winning a trophy for Liverpool is an important thing. 6 years without a trophy, it could give the players a lift and the club a lift after a very difficult time, you know, off the pitch recently. And particularly with Chelsea and Arsenal looking as weak as they are at the moment, it give them a lift and a boost to try and get that fourth place in the league. And I think that happened last time in 2001 under Houllier. They won trophies and got a bit more of a winning mentality amongst the squad and had a good few years under him.
Alternatively, if you look at what happened to Arsenal last year after they lost to Birmingham, then they've been in the tailspin ever since, haven't they? So, you know, it could go one or two ways.
Well, what other prospects do you think against Cardiff, who do have an unhappy recent record at Wembley in the FA Cup final and, of course, the Championship playoff?
What
do you think the chances are for Cardiff in this game?
I don't think they're great. I do think Liverpool will win the match. I mean, Cardiff, they're doing okay in the Championship. I think they lost 3-0, was it, in the last game, though?
To Ipswich, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
they've lost three of the last four. I mean, but they may be focused a little bit on this.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, you can't say they're going to have a chance, but, you know, who knows? I mean, Birmingham, you probably thought that about Birmingham against Liverpool in 2001, like Owen said. But
Or against Arsenal.
Or against Arsenal as well. But, I mean, just from a point of view of the Liverpool lineup, it'd be interesting to see whether Dalglish starts with Carroll or not, who's looked like he's been playing better in recent weeks. But he's a sentimental Al Feller is Dalglish, and I think Bellamy against Cardiff, who has been Liverpool's outstanding performer in the last two or three months, will probably start, and I think that'll push Carroll out, and then Downing will be in instead of Carroll, which, because you know the two of them should play together because he's supposed to be there to create chances for Carroll, but I think Downing will start instead of Carroll.
Right, a rare chance for Bellamy to face one of his former teams, so yeah. Dalglish should be heartless not to indulge that. But of course he went with Suarez, Gerrard and Carroll in their last cup clash with the Championship team just last weekend, and how well did that go? So, you know, it's a
But we haven't got any Brighton players playing for us.
Own goal up front.
We need OG up front, but not you, Owen.
No, indeed not. Super. Well, Liverpool currently just 4 points off a Champions League place. You've got Newcastle above them, and then Chelsea and Arsenal level on points with Arsenal. Just ahead on goal difference. Arsenal facing a huge match this weekend, the North London derby against Spurs at the Emirates. We'll have more on that very shortly. A couple of posts, though. We were talking injuries on Monday, and Odessa Steps has posted in a list of notorious injuries from American baseball. I like this. Outfielder Glenn Allen Hill had a nightmare about spiders, ran out of his bedroom and cut himself on a glass table. Outfielder Marty Cordova was unable to play in a daytime game because he fell asleep in a tanning bed and got sunburned. Catcher Brett Barbary missed a game because, while making pre-game tacos, he forgot to wash his hands and got hot sauce in his eyes. All true, apparently. Kai Kialoma says, speaking of Ever Banega and players with unfortunate injuries, he basically ran himself over with his own car in time-honoured fashion. My favourite is Jari Littmanen at Malmo, when he got a bottle cap in his eye when Malmo director of football, Hasse Borg, tried to open a bottle of lemonade with a can of snus. It says in brackets how Swedish. I have no idea what that means. But is it as if that wasn't enough, Littmanen has also been able to hurt himself by falling down the stairs while trying to pick milk up for his newborn son, by wearing the wrong kind of insoles, by getting a ball on his ear, and by falling on his head and having concussion. I think that last one's fair enough, really.
Yeah. Didn't he have a heart problem when he went to Fulham? And
did he?
Yeah, and then he still played on for about 3 or 4 years afterwards. So
yeah. Oh, he's a great little player, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. Madrid Valiant says, talking of self-inflicted football injuries, one of the stupidest and most costly must be Spanish goalie Santi Canizares missing out on the 2002 World Cup after dropping a cologne bottle on his foot. Somebody else posted and said it wasn't cologne, it was aftershave. Now, what's the difference?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Goalkeepers are the worst for that. I know Michael Stensgaard, Liverpool's reserve goalkeeper, dropped the ironing board on his foot and he was out for a long, long time. That, if it's a goalkeeper who's involved, then it's always feasible that it's a ridiculous injury.
Yeah, all right. In other reaction to Monday's pod, Dehoda says, the fans of nominative determinism on the pod will be delighted to know that the name of the prince that was buried under the snow, who was Dutch, by the way, a sort of orange frosty, was Friso. That's great, isn't it? I mean, it's obviously not. And get well soon to said Dutch royal.
Mr. Friso.
Yeah. Other footballers behaving questionably, story. Thierry Henry, planning to rebuild his 6 million Hampstead home and replace it with a bigger one, incorporating a four-story fish tank.
I saw this. That's just what you need in these straightened times, isn't it? A four-story fish tank.
Oh, that would be amazing, though. I went to a hotel in Berlin that had a four-story fish tank. You could get a lift up in the middle of it.
Brilliant. I think they should get one in here.
That would be fantastic. There is space for it, isn't there? But not to be outdone, Stephen Ireland, who's already spent more than £100,000 on his 13-foot aquarium, which has Wi-Fi, apparently, in it. How's he got Wi-Fi in an aquarium? But anyway, he's now believed to be planning a shark tank under his kitchen floor.
He'd probably jump in and swim around for a bit with him, wouldn't he?
Stephen Ireland.
Yeah, he looks like an otter. He could do that.
It's not very fair, is it, Greg?
Yeah, he does look like an otter.
He's a quirky individual.
Yeah.
Did you say otter or nutter?
Otter.
Oh, right.
Yes, he looks like an otter. You have a look at a picture of him and he looks like an otter.
Let's leave that one ambiguous, shall we? Good. Dell at E7 Dell says, I hope there'll be some discussion of the West Ham winning with 10 men phenomenon. Jacob, you're ideally placed to talk about that.
Yeah. Again.
Mm-hmm.
Third game in a row.
And this time, without a goalie.
Yeah. Robert Green was sent off after 53 minutes they might appeal it because he wasn't actually... I don't think he was actually the last man, but it was a foul on Roman Bednar. And they were 2-1 up at the time. They had been 2-0 up. And I was following it on Twitter and sort of losing it and thinking, oh, God, what... Because they'd done it for the last 7 out of their 8 league games. They hadn't had a keeper on the bench. Because in the Championship, you can only use 5 players, which was just brought in at the start of this season, unlike in the Premier League, where you can have 7 players on the bench. So
why did they bring that rule in?
I think maybe because... the big teams might have bigger squads, and if you go down low in the league, maybe they wouldn't be able to fill up 7 places.
So West Ham regularly take to the field without a reserve goalkeeper on the bench?
Well, logically, it makes sense because they hadn't actually had a red card to a goalkeeper for 8 years.
Well, what happens if your goalie gets injured?
You put Emery Lansbury in goal and you win 4-1.
Right. He didn't have a save to make, did he?
No, he did do a couple of good catches, apparently. But also, Blackpool didn't have a goalkeeper on the bench.
Hmm.
So it makes more sense to...
The chances of getting your goalkeeper sent off...
Or injured as well.
In a season, it might happen once, maybe.
And Robert Green's never been sent off, I think.
Not if you're Chelsea.
Mm.
Well, I mean, you regularly get teams go down to their third choice, but...
I mean, if you averaged out how many times a goalkeeper gets injured or sent off in a season at every club, I'm sure it's probably once. And how many games do you lose anyway? You
know? I'm all for it anyway. I like it when outfield players go in goal. I think it's a good thing. We should have more of it.
Mm.
But it's quite, forced to go in goal.
Yeah.
It's quite remarkable, though, to win 2-0 with having 10 men. It's the third game in a row where they haven't... against Millwall, they were down to 10 men after 10 minutes and beat them. Against Southampton, Matt Taylor was sent off after 18 minutes. They drew 1-1 with their promotion rivals. Goes to Blackpool, who were on a great run. And they win 4-1 to go back top of the league.
You'd be the man to ask for this, Jacob. Do you know if Henry Lansbury, because of the employ of this tactic, whether he actually does any training regularly in goal? Or
I think he played for the under-21s in goal.
Really?
Yeah. Not first choice.
Hmm.
And he is in the squad, but not listed as a goalkeeper for the next week's game. He's a midfielder. But, I think he's one of those players, outfield players, who can do it, like, say, Phil Jagielka, for example.
All right. You mentioned under-21s, which more or less brings us towards England. We did say Owen Gibson there at the Wembley thing. You've got the new Stuart Pearce... what did I say? Did I say Owen?
You said me.
And you're here, of course.
I'm here.
Right. You mentioned under-21s, which kind of brings us towards international football. And we had Dominic Fifield there at Wembley hearing the Stuart Pearce unveiling of New Look England. What you got the team details there, Jacob? Anything exciting?
Yeah, Fraser Campbell's in.
That is exciting.
Yeah, that is really exciting.
Who's not in? Because that was the story, wasn't it? Big
Rio,
names.
Rio Ferdinand, Frank Lampard.
Rio and Frank not in.
Yeah.
And Lescott's there or not?
He's not in.
He's not in. And who's captain?
On the captaincy issue, Pearce says the ideas of who it should be, he says, reading from his iPad. And we'll make a final decision when the players get together next week. He says it will be a captain for one game, as I'm only in charge for one game.
Oh, all right then.
I thought it might have been a bit of a younger, more experimental squad, because
it's supposed to be a brave new world, isn't
yeah,
it?
You look at it. Not just that, but I mean, he could have been selfish from his own point of view, the fact he's going to be taking the Great Britain team and tried out some of those players and given a big match experience, you know, mm-hmm. and he's under 21 players. But
although, I suppose, it's not, you know, I think you don't put Oxlade-Chamberlain in there if you could start him, wouldn't you? Otherwise, he's probably better off with the under 21 still. Mm-hmm.
But you wanted more of a punk England.
I'm not saying I wanted more of a punk England, you know, but yeah. I think, yeah, oh, I'm a massive England fan, obviously, yeah. yeah, no, I just thought, you know, he could have gone out there and put a few younger players in there and stuff, but, maybe it's because Pearce is a nationalist, he puts a nation first.
I see Tom Cleverley in the squad, though, as well, and Micah Richards is back.
But they've only got three friendlies before they go to the Euros, and so the idea of experimenting in one of those seems slightly odd anyway.
Well, they didn't necessarily need to be experimented with anyway, because they qualified quite well.
Right, that's enough England chat anyway. Let's move on, and coming up very, very shortly, North London Derby. Woof. Jamie Henderson tweeting in says, how will Milan fare without Ibrahimovic against Juve this weekend, and do you foresee the winners going on to clinch Serie A? Well, thanks, Jamie. I've just managed to shoehorn a bit of Serie A in here before we get on to the Premier League weekend. It is a big game this Saturday at the San Siro as Milan host Juventus. Milan are currently a point ahead of Juve. Those two teams have been within 2 points of each other since October. So it's a real ding-dong battle between them. As I say, Milan currently have the advantage, but Juve have a game in hand. They also have the fact that they have already beaten Milan twice this season, once at the Juventus Arena in Turin and once in the Coppa Italia as well. And they've got Pirlo, of course, who'll really be fired up for this one, his return to Milan. And I think actually stand a very good chance against the Milan side. They're a much more solid team, Juve. Milan are probably going to be without Ibrahimovic, who should be serving the last game of his three-match ban, although they are appealing that today, so that may well change. But I fancy Juve to go to the San Siro and get a result there, I must admit. Other Italian news, quick shout for Lazio, who are taking on Atletico Madrid this very day. They're, I think, what, 3-1 down for the first leg? So not much hope there, especially when you consider that the man on the bench for them, their manager this afternoon, has already resigned, but then was cajoled into making the trip with his players by the outraged team director, who said, you can't walk out on the team just before, it was about 40 minutes before the flight takes off. You have to get back in there and manage this game. So Eddie Rey has gone to Madrid to be on the bench for that game. And after that, he's off. Who's going to take over? Be shocked when I tell you that the name of Sven-Göran Eriksson has been linked with an improbable but romantic return to the Eternal City. Oh, producer Ben's just said, what about Paolo Di Canio? And that is a great shout. Mm. He's come to their rescue before. Remember when he took that 70% pay cut just to go back to bankrupt Lazio and inspire them to improbable salvation in Serie A? Sorry, Jacob.
Just to take it back to the Football League then. Right, his Swindon team won 2-1 on Tuesday night against fellow promotion rivals Shrewsbury, and they're now top.
They are on fire, aren't they?
He's doing well.
He's doing ever so well.
If you ignore the man, then, you know, you have to sit back and admire him.
Mm. Quite a manager. Now, meantime in the Premier League, big game at the Emirates, North London derby, Arsenal against Spurs. They're calling this Arsenal's biggest North London derby in his entire 16 years with the club.
Can that be right?
Yeah, it could be.
I'd be interested to see whether Tottenham going into this as favourites at the Emirates. I imagine they probably are, I would have thought.
The first time I was trying to work it out, and I asked someone who might know, and he came up with the last time was possibly 1987 that Spurs went there as favourites.
Yeah, I mean, that's how good Spurs are at the moment.
And also, obviously, I mean, all the stuff going on in the background at Arsenal, it is a massive game for him, and if they were to... if they were to win, it would dispel some of that doom and gloom, and you know, and maybe put him on the back up, slightly back on the front foot in that race with Chelsea for fourth spot. But no, I mean, yeah, it's a huge game, isn't it?
You look at the two squads, and Tottenham have just got the better squad, particularly, you know, the first 12 or 13 players. They've, you know, they're firing in all areas, and Arsenal are still, yeah, I mean, they're very weak in the middle of midfield.
How many Arsenal players would get into the Spurs first 11?
Van Persie.
Yeah, that's it, I think.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Vermaelen at the back, because Spurs... No. Do you not think? No?
I don't rate Vermaelen.
I think Vermaelen would be all right in Spurs' defence. I just think Spurs sometimes have got some of their older defenders who are more injury-prone, although Vermaelen is, isn't he? That's why he'd fit in.
Interesting how they deal with it, though, being favourites and going there, because the history of Spurs in big games away from home is generally that they lose them against the big sides. I think it was something like the first time when they won their last season, it was the first time in 65 games they've won at a top four team away from home. And this season, in the big games away, they haven't won any yet. They've drawn with Liverpool. They were quite poor in that game, weren't they?
Yeah, they had quite a weak team out. I thought they did play well considering the team.
And then they've been beaten by City and United, and they drew with Newcastle.
Mm. Luka Modric is missing for the last game, which is the disappointing 0-0 draw with Stevenage. Adebayor back as well, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's big for Spurs, because against City, when they had a Defart front on his own, they couldn't hold the ball up. It's not really his type kind of game. Adebayor's much better at that. And
it's really important for the shape. He definitely is. He can hold play up and let the midfield get forward and in support.
Spurs tore apart Newcastle in their last Premier League game.
Well, Adebayor and Sahar looked amazing, didn't they, together? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was amazing how
Sahar's
quick
a great signing.
Yeah.
So it looks pretty bleak, do you think, for the Gunners this weekend, Owen?
I'm saying a draw. I think.
Really?
Yeah. I think they'll. I think for the reasons that Jacob says, I think that we might. Spurs might not quite turn it on to the same extent as they do at home.
Despite my own reasons, I'm going to say Spurs will beat them if they play to their full potential.
Yeah, I think Spurs will beat them as well.
With the current state of crisis at Arsenal and the ongoing succession of injuries at the back, surely this reads like a major, major win for Spurs.
I'm still saying a draw.
All right, then.
It'd be fascinating if they lose, what the reaction would be from the home fans. And
it'll be unthinkable. Outright rebellion, I think, almost.
Whether he would survive. If Spurs were to go there, and it wouldn't be inconceivable for them to really hurt on Arsenal.
But that's the thing, yeah. If they truly thrashed them, then that could put a lot of pressure on Wenger. I think maybe the fans might be a little bit more understanding, because surely they can see that Spurs are the better team.
Hey. Yeah, but they might be not so understanding that they are the better team, though. Why? How they've become, how they got to this situation.
Yeah. Has money been spent on all the rest of it?
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, the other fixtures involving those top four, we mentioned Chelsea taking on Bolton, currently level on points, Chelsea with Arsenal, but just behind on goal difference. And Newcastle are hosting Wolves, who still haven't got a manager, is that right?
As of now, no.
They're being linked now with Walter Smith.
On a short-term deal, yeah.
Would that be a good shout?
There's no idea where he's been. Has he been?
Well, he left Rangers, and then he's been out of football for what, 2 years?
I can't see it. He's a much.
Has he been running a circus?
can't see. He's a much better shout than Mick McCarthy, to be honest. You know?
Right.
It seems like they sort of did that classic thing of pushing someone out before they'd quite got all their ducks in a row about who's going to replace him. You know, and Poirier came to nothing because Brighton wanted £2 million for him.
Dave Jones used to manage him in the past, didn't he? I mean, he'd be a good shout if you hadn't got shut of him in the past as well.
Mm. And there you go. Liverpool, of course, are taking on Cardiff at Wembley, so they won't be busy at all. Fascinating weekend in prospect. We'll be reviewing it all in Monday's Football Weekly, and there'll be a paper review with the German take on that Basel nightmare for Bayern, and of course the Italians' comments on the Chelsea game from Tuesday night, which will be up on the Guardian website and on iTunes from Friday morning. So do join me for that. In the meantime, have a super weekend. Many thanks to Owen, to Greg and to Jacob for joining us today, and producer Ben, and we'll speak to you on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.